Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I have a feeling at the end of the year, the committee is going to say we're only having a three-team playoff rather than put Cincinnati in.
Pete Thimmel.
It was one of those really fun Saturdays. You're juggling remotes. You're juggling what's up on YouTube TV.
Here's Pete and Dan.
Welcome to Pod Overreaction Monday. Get your popcorn ready, as Lane Kiffin would say. 9 ranked teams yesterday lost. Day was wilder than Urban Meyer at the bar. Oh, boy. Yeah, I went there. Oregon, Arkansas, Notre Dame, Florida, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, the contract extension, Aggies, Fresno State, UCLA, and Baylor all lose. Now, some of those guys had to play ranked teams, but whole thing shook up. We will get to what's good, namely Alabama and Georgia looking like they're steamrolling their way to an inevitable SEC title game clash and then probably a rematch or so, who knows, rematch at some point. These are clearly the two best teams at this point. But other than those two, I don't know who you feel great about. A lot of contenders for those other two spots. Oregon still has a good path. They kind of had a mulligan after their Ohio State win. They lose to OT at Stanford. Pat was at that game. He's not on the pod today because he's flying West Coast to East Coast, and we didn't want to tape late, and we really don't like him anyway.
All the swimming fans can click off now. Go back to the swim.
There'll be no swim swam updates.
Yes, we like Brooke Forty. She got honored at Stanford. That's why Pat was there. So good, another good day for the Forty family and a good year for him.
Yep, and good day for us. We don't have to talk to Pat. So obviously got Oklahoma still unbeaten. Wake Forest is unbeaten in the ACC. See, there's also Cincinnati coming off the huge window, Notre Dame, and then lesser extent BYU and Coastal Carolina. Like, could somebody sneak in? Certainly Cincinnati. Man, if it ain't this year, it isn't happening. So it is the first week of October and everything is upended. Pete, your thoughts on the unpredictable Saturday we just had?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those really fun Saturdays where like you're juggling remotes, you're juggling what's up on YouTube TV. You know, it's a good Saturday when I need to consult Sam Cooper and Nick Bromberg to find like an obscure game stream because it's not on my YouTube TV or my hotel TV. I couldn't find that Louisville Wake game. And it was a great game and it was a great finish. It was on like some bizarro ESPN Plus. The Bally's logo was in the corner of the screen. I was just like, is this one of those moments where like TV has passed me by and I like don't understand it? And I'm sure like Nick and Sam are like side texting like Grandpa Thamel can't find the game again. You know, like they usually send me some like illegal Australian stream. So I do think it says a lot that a team that theoretically is the ACC's best chance to go to the College Football Playoff was on like a bandit, like, you know, stream of some kind.
The ghost of Jefferson Pilot.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was some kindred cousin. Jefferson Pilot's new age streaming cousin was where the game was. And again, I found it. It was fine. Like I have ESPN Plus. Like I'm not without ways to find games. I can find like obscure FCS games. You know, I can watch all our New England United games preparing for Coach Lasso to start. But So anyway, it was just a awesome, wild, frenetic Saturday. I ended the night in Baton Rouge. I was at that 9 o'clock kick in New Orleans for a convention and went over there. And yeah, we can talk about that more later, but little smattering of booze for old Coach O from the good people in Baton Rouge. That was another tangible sign that the honeymoon is over. They also burnt many, many, many timeouts because they couldn't get their operation going and took an awful penalty on fourth and short where they had to punt from midfield. That was bad, bad ball. Some bad ball in Baton Rouge there. It's not good for those of us who like folk hero coaches.
All right. Yes. A million wild games. All right. Let's start with the contenders where there's a whole bunch of them. The Big Ten. Iowa has a big win over Maryland on Friday night. Penn State rolls again. Shuts out Indiana. Both Michigan and Michigan State win games. Again, Michigan with a sizable margin of victory and a good show of force up in Wisconsin. First time Jim Harbaugh has won as an underdog. That was one of his big things. He was 2.5 points by kickoff and then won up in Madison a long time. And then there's Ohio State, which just absolutely trucks a Rutgers team that I think knew they couldn't compete you got five teams. They're all going to sort this out. You know, I know Ohio State's got a loss and hasn't looked great, but to me, until someone beats them, they're still the favorite in this league. I'm still taking Ohio State. Your thought on the state of the Big Ten, Pete, with those five teams and all looking pretty good?
What we're going to see now coming forward the next few weeks, the Big Ten epitomizes it, Dan, is we're just going to start to have some new, some 07, more 07 vibes, some 2021 vibes. Iowa City is the center of the sport next week, which is great, right? If you've ever been to a game at Kinnick, Dan?
I have. Awesome. Yeah. Great town.
Awesome.
Great stadium.
Great town. Great place. Tight, packed stadium. It's one of those stadiums where the distance from the sideline to the players is very, very, very short. And I really feel like Kinnick, I assume, is going to host game day, and I assume is going to be the big noon whatever kickoff. Like, Kinnick is going to be the heartbeat of the sport. And I just think it's great for college football when that blood pumps to places that aren't Clemson, Tuscaloosa, Athens, Columbus, Norman, et cetera.
Baton
like
Rouge,
that is.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That is what makes college football great. I've been to a couple games at Kinnick over the years. They had a big Ohio State game there during the Tressel era that was kind of like the game of the week that week. And I really feel like Iowa passed a huge test. They went on the road. They not only beat Maryland, but they just completely dismantled Maryland. And the notion that I think is really intriguing right now is, look, Iowa has had, you know, three other times probably under Ferentz. I think 02, 09, and 15, where they've been good enough to kind of rise to this top end conversation. They were excellent in 02. They got out Iowa'd by Michigan State in 15 in that, you know, as there was that 17 play, two fourth down drive in the Big Ten title game. And the difference in 2021 for Iowa trying to really puncture that high end of the national scene is that the rest of the sport is lower, other than Alabama and Georgia, obviously. Like, that race for 3 and 4, there's a really good argument for Iowa. You know, Iowa's one of those teams where every half dozen years, everything can come together. And it feels like this Penn State game being at home as opposed to being on the road, that's a sign that it's going to come together. They are, I mean, look, their center's their best player, right? It's Iowa. He's awesome. They have Jack Campbell, their linebacker, is just one of these like old school Big Ten tackling machines. You know, Iowa has 28 players in the NFL. It's not like some like woebegone program that doesn't flash, but enough has coalesced this year. Ferentz gave me a funny quote. I called him on Saturday and he said, you know, we were talking about how Iowa has evolved. It used to be like Iowa Mad Libs. He's a former wrestler. He redshirted. He came as 220. And then he's the left tackle, who's the first round pick. And you really start looking at the AJ Epineses and the Noah Fants and the guys who've gone through there the past couple of years. They've had 9 guys leave early the last 3 years. So this isn't the Iowa that, you know, even from 15, there's been a distinct evolution from that. And credit Ferentz, credit, you know, Brian Ferentz, the OC, Phil Parker and Seth Wallace on defense, LeVar Woods, special teams coordinator. Those guys have all been there for, you know, 10 plus years. Like, there's been a consistency there. There's been results there. It's a staff that really is locked in. And I really feel like Friday, to me, was a declaration that this could be Iowa's moment. This could be one of those seasons. Now, Ferentz, he took the bait enough to give me a quote, but like, it's Kirk Ferentz. He wasn't he'd gone to bed at 5:15 in the morning the night before. So he wasn't exactly like jumping up on the table declaring we are contenders. But he acknowledged that it's a wild year and anything can happen. And, you know, every game's going to be a dogfight for Iowa. They were in a dogfight with Colorado State. Iowa epitomizes the new blood.
It makes sense. I think, look, the Big Ten is in a position to have a lot of marquee games over the next month that we weren't expecting. The SEC, which normally has all these showdowns, a lot of them have faded away. Kentucky's going to go to Georgia in a couple weeks. That's an undefeated matchup. That'll be a really interesting game if Kentucky can get through LSU next week, which isn't easy.
If LSU doesn't upset Kentucky, how weird is that?
Yeah, if LSU doesn't upset Kentucky, there you go. That's how crazy this is. Alabama games falling apart. I mean, you're just looking at it. There's not that many games where you're going, oh, here we go. Penn State at Iowa on the 9th. There's a setup for a huge possible monster end of the month where you have Penn State at Ohio State and Michigan at Michigan State. No one's circling the Michigan-Michigan State game, but they both are. Michigan's got to go to Nebraska, and then they get Northwestern at home to get to 7-0. And Michigan State's got to go to Indiana and at Rutgers. They got to go Rutgers and Indiana. doable. Let's just put it that way. So you could have a, you know, that could be a huge Saturday in late October with the Big Ten with a bunch of playoff games where you're not normally getting that. And I think in the SEC, it's sort of like, well, maybe Georgia gets upset. Maybe Alabama gets upset. Does it even matter? I don't know. We'll see. It's just the action right now is in those Big Ten teams. Iowa looking very good. Penn State, dominant defensive performance last night. I mean, shut out Indiana. Great scene again up there. This team is, only 24. Not gonna. This is an Alabama that's boat racing you, but very, very solid. Michigan going on the road. You know, everyone said, well, you got to see if Michigan could beat Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin hasn't turned out what it was, but Michigan wins 38-17. It's a definitive win. They controlled the game. They allowed 1.3 yards per carry rushing. They had 6 sacks and 3 QB hits and a forced fumble on Graham Mertz and Chase Wolf. They knocked Graham Mertz out of the game. David Ajobo and Aiden Hutchinson are really, really good on that defensive line. You know, still more to prove because Washington and Wisconsin haven't been what we thought. But one thing about Michigan is they play really hard for Harbaugh, which in what could have been a lame duck season is kind of a little bit unusual. So this, and then again, I go back to Ohio State. I mean, they just killed Rutgers, and Rutgers is not a bad football team. Very, very interesting.
14-0 before the game even started.
Yeah. I mean, Rutgers was running fakes and gimmicks. I mean, they knew they had no chance. So Big Ten is rocking. I don't know who's coming out of that. If you had to pick somebody come out of that, who do you got, Pete and Sully?
Good question, and I'll answer that. But I do want to tip my hat to Nebraska, and I know it's too early to say something nice, but that was the most shocking score of the day. There were bigger upsets, but the tenor of a 56-7 win over Northwestern, it was like we went in the DeLorean 20 years ago, right? Like that. I mean, nobody saw that coming to that tenor. And that Nebraska-Michigan game has some juice now in Lincoln coming up here, because that Michigan needs to get through that in order to play Michigan State. And Michigan passed a road test, but it'll be interesting to see a road test with what appears to be a competent offense that's finally evolving there. And Northwestern's clearly got some issues on defense too. The O'Neill hire at defensive coordinator looks like that's gone a little bit sideways. So who will come out? If I had to pick who comes out right now, I'm with you, Dan. I'm going to stay with Ohio State just because of the pure talent. And when I was there in August in camp, they had so many good young freshmen. And all those guys are getting thrown into the fire and they're expediting their development. They're getting a lot better. I saw that you look at the first 2 scores of Ohio State's game yesterday. You got Travion Henderson, was the most talented back essentially in the country last year. Think of him as like a young Bijan Robinson for this class. And he scores the first TD of the game, 44-yard run. And then another true freshman, Denzel Burke, returns a pick, 23 yards for a touchdown. You blink. And the Buckeyes are up 14-0. And that's just an example of some of that new talent growing, flashing, gaining confidence, coming. And it's still a talent game. And Ohio State, in my estimation, still has a distinct talent advantage. So can I sit here and tell you, like, the defensive nuances that have changed now that Kerry Coombs isn't the play caller anymore? No, I don't have a sense of that. I didn't watch that game that closely. But with that much of a staff, with Paul Rhodes there in the background, Matt Barnes, who's calling the game now, is supposed to be one of the brighter young minds in the sport. Like, there's going to be ways to figure it out, you know, for Ohio State. And, you know, it's been interesting. This is really the first challenge schematically of Ryan Day's time there. Now, there was some tumult. He took over for the games and Urban was suspended, etc. But when you really go through what's left on Ohio State's schedule, Maryland doesn't scare you. At Indiana isn't the same game it was last year. Penn State's at home, so you got to feel like you're going to have a distinct advantage there. You got to go to Nebraska. I mean, they've thumped them so thoroughly for so long, it's hard to imagine that really being much. They have Purdue, then Michigan State at home, and Michigan on the road. And by then, you've got another 6-8 weeks of evolution for your program. So I remain bullish on the Buckeyes. To me, it's not like, oh God, they don't have a good offensive line, right? Like, there aren't like huge fundamental flaws that can't be fixed and evolved when you have that much talent. Sully looks pissed. What do you got, Sully?
Guys, we're crawling right back into the Ohio State bandwagon. All they did was crush Akron in a Rutgers team. Like, what are we doing here? Iowa has looked really good. I have a one-game schedule. All I got to do is beat Penn State next week, and then they're Purdue, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Minnesota, Illinois, Nebraska. They're waltzing into the Big Ten title game.
Yeah,
it's the Hawkeyes. That's the easiest.
Someone else is going to be on the field in Indianapolis.
Yeah, Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State as well. Those are three tough games compared to Penn State. So give me the Hawkeyes. Crowning them after a Rutgers game.
Sully just gave Iowa reservation for one at St. Elmo's.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
SEC, two big, highly anticipated matchups did not turn out that way. And I just feel like this is where we're going to get. Although we did get the exciting Alabama-Florida game. But Alabama, Nick Saban moves to 24-0 against his assistants. The defensive performance they put on Ole Miss in that first half was just ridiculous. Rebels could have had a nice backdoor cover for a lot of us. You know, that would have been nice. Lane would have been nice. I'm just saying. Didn't have to win, but you could have scored one more touchdown. But this was all Alabama. That defense was great. I had a feeling they weren't going to be able to pull up huge. That's why I was all over the under in that game. I just didn't think Ole Miss would score a gazillion points again. But that was impressive. Meanwhile, Georgia wins 37-0 on Arkansas. I'm not even sure they brought their whole team. It might have just been a skeleton crew. I mean, I don't know what that was. Arkansas did not show up. When you can win 37-0 against the supposed number 8 team in the country, and your quarterback is the law firm of Stetson Bennett, and he goes 7 for 11 for 72 yards, and you win 37-0. It's not you, it's them.
162 yards allowed. That's definitely you.
Well, that's you, but they suck. The other guys aren't doing anything. That was just a massacre and then everything going wrong.
Sorry, I can't hear you over my lone wolf howl. Could you say that again?
Oh,
my lone wolf is howling so loud. Oh, okay. I just can't hear you.
You're right about that.
I saw that one coming.
And I broke my cardinal rule and I sat there watching the Alabama game. Rule one of college football gambling, don't bet against Alabama. And when I'm sitting there
never.
Going, what? Yes. Rule two, yes. See rule one. And what do?
Can I say something mean right now? I know we usually say something nice in place. I want to say something mean. Like I was, you know, in the middle of covering a game and making calls for takeaways. And I had like a 5-minute rabbit hole of panic in the SEC. So I picked South Carolina as my lock of the week over Troy. And it's breaking all sorts of cardinal rules of gambling. Like I laughed at Pat last week. He picked mighty Syracuse as his lock of the week. They did cover, gritty cover, as he pointed out. But like, why do you attach yourself to like these like bad teams? So I broke all the rules. So South Carolina, Troy, may have been the wildest play of Saturday. Fumble, recovery, fumble, touchback. I want to say something mean about Jamar Brown. He scooped up the third fumble, ran untouched, you know, a bunch of yards to the end zone, and then did one of those idiot, like, flip it to the refs before he went over the goal line. And at that moment, it was the difference between covering and not covering for South Carolina. I'm watching this play on Twitter, and I'm like, this is why you don't gamble. Like, this is why you buy Apple stock. Like, it was just like the
Birders bet on Alabama.
Yeah, I said that to the group chat at some point. Like, mother of mercy, that was like an all-time bonehead play. He's like, run to the end zone. Why would you be so anxious to get rid of the ball? Like if you were, you know, this is your one chance to go score a touchdown. You're a defensive player in South Carolina. Why would you be so anxious to get rid of it?
Just no practice doing it.
It seems like one guy a year does this, and it's so punitive because then you lose the ball through the end zone. So it's not like you fumble it out of bounds and you can get it back. So anyway, I was mighty angry at Coach Beamer's Gamecocks for a little there, but gritty cover. So all forgiven.
We went 4-0 in our locks of the week were 4-0, and we all finished with a winning record this week.
We had
some by more points than others, but yeah.
Oh, Sully propping up his own Vol lock. Yeah. Sully's like 1-11 picking the Vols in his time on the podcast. So he needs his moment.
Hey, got the one this week.
Yeah, we did have a listener parlay our locks last week, and they couldn't bet on Dan's lock, which lost because I think he was in Virginia, and you can't bet on Liberty if you live in Virginia or whatever. So
don't ever bet on Liberty.
That guy went 3. He went 3-0 last week. So I want to know. We tweet at us if you parlayed our locks because, you know, we probably bought you a nice dinner if nothing else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a nice $10 parlay four ways. That would get somebody a little scratch. You can buy a new lawnmower with that win, Dan.
I could get a bad boy mower, zero turn. All right, Kentucky, wild night at Kentucky. they have lost. They beat Florida 2013. Incredible crowd in Lexington, not known as one of the great environments in college football. When they turn it up, you give them something to root for. They're there. Big Blue Nation. They know they support the team. Second win in the last 35 attempts, I think, against Florida. They had a 31-game losing streak for a while. I think it was 2017. Blocked field goal return by Trevin Wallace. 76 yards seemed to change the whole game. Cats are unbeaten. They've won four straight by seven or less. They're sneaking through. They're getting it done. You know, we've been singing the praises of this program for years because Mark Stoops got it solid, really has come up with an interesting recruiting philosophy. A lot of Ohio and Michigan that get into the Midwest and offer like the closest SEC option to these kids. And they just kind of kept picking away. We'll see. Georgia in a couple weeks again. LSU next week will be wild, but it's still LSU. Right, thoughts on the Cats and Mark Stoops program?
I give Kentucky a lot of credit, and I'm going to echo what Dan said. Like, the times I have been to big football games at Kentucky, that place is rocked, man. Like, they want a winner. They would be a good candidate for small sample Heisman BBN because Florida had 15 penalties for 115 yards. That's just that. That's a faulty operation. And look, Dan Mullen's a good football coach. He's coached in a lot of SEC games. He's coached in the second most SEC games of any head coach currently in the SEC, other than Nick Saban. He's been the head coach in a lot. He has endured at Mississippi State and then thrived at Florida because his teams don't make those kind of mistakes, right? Like, you think of Dan Mullen, it's a clean operation. And so some of the credit has to go to Kentucky because that was not a clean Gator operation on Saturday night. Now, the fact that they beat Florida by more points than they beat Chattanooga doesn't exactly give me like long-term hope, but Leon Cohen has brought them some offensive competency as the OC. Will Levis has given us great viral material to talk about on the podcast.
We're going to get to it. We're getting to it.
He also just gives them like enough juice in the run game and enough pop. And yeah, that is a solid program. I mentioned Mark Stoops as a potential Nebraska coach on the podcast a month ago, and it prompted like a flurry of media in Kentucky being like basically buzz off Yahoo. Like, we're keeping Mark Stoops. But Mark Stoops is just a really solid football coach. He's entering the territory that Mullen did at Mississippi State, where he's been a consistent have-not winner in a conference where that's very difficult. And I do think as he goes on here, he's going to become more of a coveted commodity. And it's games like last night, moments like last night. I don't think Kentucky had beaten Florida there since 1986, the Bill Buckner year. So credit to Kentucky for just sort of, you know, building. They invested facilities. Kentucky looks like a real SEC place. It's a destination. And, you know, you build for enough years and grind for enough years, you get nights like last night.
And we're talking about a Kentucky program that has lost to Florida where they didn't cover two wide receivers at one point at Kroger Field. So they didn't turtle last night, and they could have, and they had nine stops in the red zone against Florida at the end of the game there. And got to give them credit, man. That's Stoops has got it rolling.
Yeah, they're not winning big. Like I said, four straight, seven or less. But they're winning. Don't ask how, ask how many. And right now they got all of them. It's all that really matters. All right, let's get to this bit. Will Levis, podcast hero. As we know, the Kentucky quarterback earlier this year, he's a pretty good quarterback. Wouldn't say he's great, but he's good enough. But he made a lot of waves when he ate a banana, no longer ripe banana from his girlfriend's house. He ate the skin and all, the peel and all. So he's back with the content. He's got the content going. And Will put out there, he seems to be with his girlfriend. I think this is his girlfriend, or else he's Urban Meyering this thing. I don't know what's going on. There's a young lady in the video. They're at a diner. They do this bit. Is, do you drink your coffee black or not? He says no. And he proceeds to put mayonnaise in his coffee. Not sugar, not cream, not milk, not one of those little packets of powder thing you put in. Mayonnaise. And he takes a sip. Now, we can't really see that he drinks the mayonnaise. And so I have my doubts that he would do this. However, I'm going to say something mean. What the hell, man? You don't ruin a good cup of coffee with that crap. You had me on the banana peel, Will, but I'm not falling for this. This man is a sociopath, as Pat Forty once said. I'm concerned that he's out there influencing young people in this country, and I think we need federal legislation to do something about it.
Yes, I love coffee, and I'm offended. He's from Connecticut. So I think that's about as gross as UConn's record, man. Maybe they're trying to bring in some more Midwestern talent, you know, like you brought up. They love mayonnaise in the Midwest, and they've been hammering hard, the Midwest recruits. And maybe it's
basically an egg yolk with oil and then maybe some other. I hate mayonnaise. I hate it on everything. I hate big mayo. I hate that you have to ask for it to not get put on stuff. They just throw it on crap all over the place. Well, the last thing I need to do is order a cup of coffee and be worried they're going to squeeze some damn Duke's mayo in there. I don't need that. I don't need to be like, I'd like a black coffee. They always go cream and sugar. No, black. That's it. Black. Just the coffee. I don't need to now say no Hellman's too.
So
if I have to do that, I am coming for Will Levis. I'm warning you. Don't do this.
When NIL was in theory and there was all the pearl clutching over what's going to happen when these guys get paid, this was what they saw happening. Big Mayo was coming. Big Mayo was coming for us. And they didn't see it. All the old fogies who didn't want change, couldn't see change, thought it would break the model and people wouldn't watch. No one wants to watch mayo in your coffee, you psychopath, Will Levis.
Well, we know which bowl Kentucky's going to already this year.
So yes. Is there anything more humiliating
the Mayo Bowl
when you're hungry and you're at like a gas station or an airport and you just want a sandwich, right? And the sandwich looks good. It's like a turkey club or a roast beef and cheddar. And you're like, oh, I would love to have that sandwich. And it's in like that plastic wrap. All and there's already mayo on it. Like there's already mayo on it. Like you're alienating potential customers. Oh, it's the worst. I hate that.
I don't
that
get thing. It. You get so mad you can't buy the little. It's already bad. I mean, it's not a good sandwich. Yeah. It's been sitting at the Sunoco. But you need it, right? Just give me the turkey and the bread. That's what I'm looking for. Maybe there's a piece of cheese in there, some whatever it's called. Yeah, this is Big Mayo getting at us, going through Kentucky football, and now the power of Big Mayo is behind Kentucky. They're winning games, and that I mean they got a lot of money in mayonnaise. There's a lot of money, but they're sitting there going, look, people are eating less tuna fish sandwiches.
When your stadium's named after a supermarket.
Good point. Aisle five.
Big mayonnaise is.
Stay out of aisle five of Kroger Field, Will Levis. Now they're like, wow, boy, they serve a lot of coffee in this country. Maybe if we get mayonnaise. I mean, who would throw an egg yolk and like oil into your coffee? Because that's what you're doing. He didn't drink that thing anyway. This is just,
I'm glad Pat's not on the pod. Pat would be pro mayo somehow. Will Levis is his Kentucky homeboy. Yeah. This is good. This is our fight back to Big Mayo. Pat would have been pro this move.
Cincinnati walks into Notre Dame, does exactly what they want. 24-13. They win going away. There's a huge crowd of Cincinnati fans there. They're waving the flag. I mean, this was the greatest day in Cincinnati football history. I don't think team's good. They were the better team. They've got a shot at this. I have a feeling at the end of the year, the committee is going to say we're only having a 3-team playoff rather than put Cincinnati in. They're just going to be like, Bama gets a bye this year. They're going to find a way. Impressive victory for Cincinnati and a great day for that program.
Yeah, I mean, we all picked Cincinnati, right? Was it 4-0 for the Bearcats on the pod? We unfolded the way in a lot of ways I thought it unfolded in terms of like both teams had bad offensive lines. Notre Dame's bad offensive line and Cincinnati's very good defensive front, especially Myjai Sanders, who had the big hit on, I forget which Notre Dame quarterback it was at the time because they rotated three of them in, but I believe it was Cone early and he just threw up a can of corn pick. And that really helped. I think it was to Deshaun Pace. Sauce had the first one on the goal line, which is a terrible throw by Cone. Also under pressure, too. So those big moments caused by Cincinnati disrupting and Notre Dame's porous offensive line really helped change the game and set the tone. And I really think it was important for Cincinnati that they not only won, but they were up 17-0 at halftime. Like, nobody could watch that game and think there was anything fluky about Cincinnati. Look, Notre Dame has Kyle Hamilton. He's excellent. But Cincinnati had the better defensive secondary. They had the more dominant defensive line. And they had the best quarterback by far and away. Desmond Ridder did not play well early. Or this game could have been worse. He was not accurate. I think he started something like 5 of 12. He looked a little skittish. Stuff was going high. But man, that last drive when he hit Lenny Taylor, the tight end, over the middle, like when it mattered, when Notre Dame kind of came back. Look, it's Notre Dame. It's home. How many times have you seen Notre Dame win that game? Like, it's a game they should win. They struggle for a first half. Like,
they won 26 straight home games. I mean, there's a reason.
Correct. And Desmond Ridder put his foot on Notre Dame's throat. simply said. And he ran it in the end zone at the end to put the game out of reach. And winning by double digits psychologically is going to mean a lot for Cincinnati when things get when they're cutting up the jalapeno cream corn in the Grapevine Marriott or wherever the heck the CFP goes every year. That's going to be a really important that it wasn't like a
game
last
control.
Second field
game
goal.
Control.
They, yeah, had, they had game control, Dan. This was Cincinnati's
They'll find
last.
Something else, though.
Yes, they'll make up a new metric. But this was Cincinnati's last big stage. They have SMU still. They have a couple road AAC games. It is unfortunate for their cause that UCF just kind of stinks. UCF lost to Navy yesterday. Yeah, which is a classic like head coach who hasn't played Navy, though. But that's like, you need so much to happen if you're Cincinnati. And some of it has already happened. They had two great road showcases. But then it becomes like, how do you control the things you can't control? And that's what the rest of the schedule looks like. That's tricky. Like, there's no marquee team in the AAC to play them in the title game that's really going to matter. Like, Memphis lost at Temple.
SMU's coming along, though.
Yeah, that's it. That's what they got. They got SMU.
That'll be like a rematch game, right? Hey, SMU's got that win over TCU.
Yeah,
not too bad.
SMU's okay. SMU's undefeated. Remember, they beat Louisiana Tech on the road on a Hail Mary on the literal last play. SMU probably should be ranked this week. They probably won't be ranked because people don't look at them in that way. But SMU has done enough. If you're undefeated at this point and you've got a couple good quality wins like they do, like, they should be ranked, but they're not. I don't know that we're taping before the AP poll comes out. I'd be skeptical of their ability to get ranked.
I think Cincinnati is not going to have that marquee game, but basically this is it. They win out. They have to win out. They have to be 13-0. And then the committee's either going to do this or they're not. They're going to need help from the other teams, which they're getting to a degree. But, and we'll get to one of them that helped. But if you're looking at Georgia and Alabama, and they're going to need an Oklahoma to lose, right? They're going to need... someone's coming out of the Big Ten, even with a loss, that many good teams. So is that spot there or not? It is unfortunate they couldn't get one more thing, but I don't know that data point would necessarily matter in the end. The committee's either going to have the stones to do this or not, or that opportunity. And that do I think Cincinnati could get in the playoff and win a game or win the championship? No, I don't. But you know what? That's not what they're trying to do right now. They're just trying to get in. And it would be monumental for that program and an incredible growth of a program that for a long time was absolutely nothing to get to that stage. It's a testament to decades. I mean, Brian Kelly and Mark D'Antonio and Butch Jones and a lot of people, even Tuberville, he's the only one who didn't fail and he became a senator. Everyone has success when they go through Cincinnati. They've gotten there. So we will see. The equally important thing to happen to Cincinnati was Oregon lost. Stanford beats them 31-24. They get an untimed down on defensive holding at the end of regulation, I think. They force the OT. Then they win it in overtime. Ducks now have a loss. Now, if we're stacking them up, they still have a win over Ohio State. So they have if it's Ohio State and Oregon at the end, they're going to have that advantage. But if the Ducks lose again, Pac-12 could be knocked out of this thing. We will see. UCLA lost again. I mean, right now, Oregon State is leading the Pac-12 North, I believe. The Pac-12 could just cannibalize itself and be out. And that's really what Cincinnati needs to keep winning and sit around and root for chaos. Hope that this type of stuff opens up. And they really need Oklahoma to lose because an unbeaten Oklahoma would be a problem. So you got Red River on that, maybe. Who knows? But
they probably need a BYU loss, too, in there.
I think they're ahead of BYU.
Yeah,
I just think they'll be ahead of BYU.
I don't think BYU can catch them, Sully.
They have five Pac-12 games.
They have seven Power 5 games. So they have Baylor and Virginia in there as well. And they do play Boise, which
and
still
Boise.
Means something. Yeah, but that'll be an interesting debate. Like right now, BYU may have a better chance than anyone else out west. Here's my conspiracy theory. I know we love conspiracy theories. Right now, the alliance, the big vaunted alliance, which is banded together to hold hands and hold up the playoff for a while, it will be interesting to see how quickly that rhetoric collapses if the ACC doesn't make the playoff, which looks inevitable. The Pac-12's chances are perilous again. Now, somebody from the Big Ten's probably going to grind their way in there, but that should happen because it's the Big Ten. But they don't have a prayer at multiple teams, and we're assuming the SEC gets multiple teams. So if the whole alliance gets shut out and you've got these three essentially rookie commissioners parading around talking about, we didn't like the process. Like, I wonder how quickly they're going to have to eat their penny loafers and just be like, oh, wait, we need teams in the playoffs because the West Coast is rotting of irrelevancy. The ACC without Clemson is just completely destined to be dragged to the bottom of the ocean with its terrible television contract. The Big Ten, which should be in a position of power, has inexplicably locked arms with the other two.
Right.
And it's like,
and the Big 12 still thinks it's a major conference, and it is for now, but that's it.
Yes.
Once Oklahoma and Texas are gone, they're not. So you have to grab these playoff spots.
They shut the Big 12 out. Remember, that was a big part of the alliance. They didn't want Bob Bowlesby in. They wanted to keep them out. So now they're holding hands, singing, and we'll all go down together. Like it's really setting up to be an epic front-facing fail for guys young in their jobs. And they have really positioned themselves with this alliance and with all this rhetoric to end up with a whole lot of egg on their face.
I agree. We've been saying it all along. Run to these playoff spots. Grab them. Go to 12 quickly. Forget the process. You're not getting a better deal. You have to expand this playoff or you become more and more obsolete. The Big 12 should be doing everything it's possible. And the Pac-12 and ACC are sitting there teetering right now. And Cincinnati could steal their spot. So it's like, bang, if that's your playoff, Georgia, Alabama, you know, let's say Iowa, right? Let's say Iowa wins the Big Ten and Cincinnati, that's your playoff. Three of your leagues are out. And some years that's at Notre Dame, right? Like Notre Dame's gotten in. It's just too easy for your leagues to be out. Now, Cincinnati's going to the Big 12, but it's just, you got to do it. I don't know what these guys are. The delay, the lack of trust. Read the cards. You're playing poker. You don't have to trust the other guys. Read your cards. Play the game. Be like Jimbo Fisher. Know when to hold them and when to fold them and when to take a contract before a bad season when everyone's saying you're killing it. I mean, how bad was that? Lost to Mississippi State. A&M could end up being the seventh best team in the SEC West. In a year, they were supposed to make the playoff, and they rewarded their coach with a lengthy $9 million a year contract.
And he can leave for less money than the Starbucks coffee I bought this morning.
Yikes. Again, when a coach is going into a season where he's supposed to be great and he agrees to a contract extension, it is a tell. It is a guy checking. If you got the royal flush, you go all in. You say, we'll see what we got. I am not surprised. I cracked this code late. Should have bet the under on the A&M win total. All right, we got to fit this game in because, you know, we love the just the underbelly and the ugliness of this gloriousness, too, of this sport. And there was really nothing better than watching Vanderbilt celebrate their victory over UConn. Something had to give. UConn had lost 9 consecutive games despite winning the national championship to the New York Times somewhere in the middle of that. I don't know how that worked, but they did. Vandy had lost 8 straight home games. Naturally, it poured. There were just epic plays in this, like, you know, an interception that then fumbled. Ends up 30-28. Vandy wins, setting up the epic 0-5 clashes of UConn and UMass next week. One of the funnier things, I don't know if they figured it out, but last night, the time of the kickoff for UMass-UConn was still TBD. Someone on Twitter pointed out to me because they're not sure if they're going to put it in the CBS Prime game or or just say, why are we even playing?
The flow sports executives are sitting around pondering how to best maximize the window. Put it at 10 a.m. and every degenerate would watch. Just put it at 10 a.m. Have like a morning. Where is it? Is it in stores or is it in Amherst or is it in the neutral location of Holyoke where New England United will be one day located?
It's in a parking lot. It's a parking lot behind an abandoned factory in Holyoke. Is that UMass?
Yeah. We could go to the Dan Wetzel press box there.
Yeah, I really should. I would send one cameraman, remote broadcasters, like just have one guy with his iPhone, like a FaceTime live. That should be the broadcast of this thing. Anyway, Vandy wins. It was a pretty epic game in the rain. But you know what was fun? Watching Vanderbilt celebrate it. I love it. Like these two teams are awful. And next week's going to be just as awful. And yet somebody will win.
Did you see the flag guy, Dan?
I did not watch the
I saw.
So Vanderbilt scores to go up 10-6 in the second quarter, and they're lining up to kick the PAT. The play's about to happen, and the flag guy's just running on the back of the end line of the end zone with the flag. Probably could have blocked the PAT if he really wanted to with the flag, and they just kick it. All right. Well, they made it 10-6. He's so excited. I guess they don't score a lot of touchdowns there, so they haven't practiced the flag celebrating in the end zone too much. But
I hope we get the 0-0 into overtime next week for UConn-UMass. When I as a joke a few years ago, I called for New England United for UMass and UConn to combine their football programs. It was a joke. Not looking like a bad plan now.
I mean, the athletic directors will meet at that little restaurant next to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Write out a deal on a... They can't afford that restaurant. That's a nice place. More like a Dunkin' nice Donuts place. Kiosk in the Shell station. We'll write it out on a napkin. We're going to combine our teams. Let's get to the small sample Heisman.
Hello, record book.
Hello, small sample Heisman.
How about that?
We like to hand out the Heisman once a week. We don't like to wait to the end. So, Pete, who wins your small sample Heisman this week?
I'm going to give my small sample Heisman to Bo Nix. We live in an era of advanced statistics, and I guarantee you no player in college football spun more yesterday than Bo Nix did against LSU. He leads the nation in scrambling pirouettes. He led the nation in no, oh my God, did that just happen plays? Bo Nix was a complete marvel to watch in leading Auburn to an upset at LSU. And Bo Nix may be remembered as the coach that sent Ed Orgeron down the spiral of losing his job this year. Bo Nix had 74 yards on 12 rushes. He had one rushing touchdown. He had one unbelievable passing touchdown where he probably ran 60 plus yards behind the line of scrimmage, was almost pushed out of bounds, ducked, jumped up, and then tossed a little dump off touchdown pass to Tyler Fromm. It was just there were more breathtaking Bo Nix, completely undesigned accidental plays than I can recall a player having in a very long time. There were shades of Manziel. People in the press box were saying Archie Manning looked like that when he was in college. I don't know. But Auburn had no business winning a football game that they ended up winning. So props to Bo Nix. He's obviously had an up and down career, and it's really been more down than up since that opener against Oregon that he won. And this is a signature win. Auburn hadn't won at LSU since 1999. That was a really cool scene last night at Tiger Stadium. It was like the band, the families, everybody's left, and they are just having a party in the corner of the end zone. And those are the kind of like quintessentially cool college moments, all that emotion that goes into an SEC game. And Bo Nix uncorked that, man. They don't do it without him just going cheat code.
Ferry Manziel. He had a great great cover of the New Orleans Times-Picayune sports page. It just said Nixed, and it had Bo Nix beating LSU. I imagine that shows up on his wall for the rest of his life. That was pretty cool, that kind of thing. Great night for them. Sully, small sample Heisman, who you got?
Yeah, we love some trash talk on the podcast, especially when it's beanpot trash talk. I'm going to give it to Tennessee running back Tyon Evans. As I mentioned on the podcast last week, he said we're fixing to have some fun against Mizzou. And sure enough, they did. In the 62-24 exorcism in Columbia, Tyon went 15 rushes for 156 yards and three touchdowns. Actually had a fourth called off, and it went to his teammate Hendon Hooker. But third longest rushing touchdown in program history for the Vols with a 92-yard scamper. And like I said, I think Tennessee's going to win the beanpot this year, and we're looking pretty good.
All right. I feel like
Sully could have run for a $1.25 against that Missouri run defense. I feel like Sully could have just... Sully's like a scat back.
My 6'4", 40-yard dash. Yes. I could probably could have made it.
Get him out in space, though. You get him in space, make people miss.
Sully was a high school defensive lineman. That's hard for me to imagine.
My small sample Heisman, Pitt quarterback Kenny Pickett, 23 of 36, 389 yards, four touchdowns. He also rushed for 21 yards as the Panthers defeated Georgia Tech 52-21. Pitt is now 4-1 and in first place the ACC Coastal Division. I would not sleep on this team. That's an excellent offense. They got a balanced attack. They got two great running backs, pretty good defense, a lot of receivers. Pitt's pretty good. And it starts with Kenny Pickett. So congratulations. And I hope you enjoy your small sample Heisman, which we don't actually send you or anything. All right. We've said lots of mean things on this pod, even with Pat not here. Pete actually stopped the pod to say something mean. So let's try. This is our moment of the week where we try to say something nice. Can we do it? Pete, can you say something nice? Or Sully,
I'll
go
Sully
first.
Sully, go first.
Mr. Sunshine, Sean Sullivan. Yep.
Mr. Sunshine here, walking on clouds. I got to give it to the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors late night, 17 fourth quarter points to come back and beat number 18 Fresno State. God, I was not awake for it, but you got to love it when you wake up and you see a big Rainbows win way late into the evening. I got to give it all. Hat tip to him after starting, 0-1 before most teams have even kicked off, be able to battle back 3-3 in the Mountain West. Come on, Rainbows, keep it going.
Yeah, I'm going to say something nice about Washington State. They went to Cal on Saturday. They won 21-6. They were obviously dealing with the shooting of one of their players that happened last week in Pullman, or maybe a little bit more than a week ago. Washington State entered that game 1-3 without a whole lot of hope. They got their star tailback, Max Borgie, back. They got their quarterback, Jaden Delora, back. And they went and had a road win in the league that a lot of people didn't think they could do. That's obviously a program that, because of the off-field incident that happened, has been through a lot. That, imagine one of your friends getting shot when you were in college. Like, that's just got to be a huge drain on everything. So it's a nice, sneaky, good road win for the Cougars at a time when their program is really reeling.
All right, I'm going to say something nice about the administrations, the athletic administrations at Colorado State, at Boise State, at San Diego State, I think Air Force, everybody that the AAC batted their eyes out at West, all of the Mountain West programs that had a consideration of going to the AAC. I know there was no invitations made, but there were officially. I mean, that's ridiculous. We didn't invite them. We just, kept trying. They decided to stay in the Mountain West, and good for them. Trying to chase one more $1 million in a TV deal or a little bit more money. I know you need money, but what you lose is community. You lose rivalries. You lose what is the purpose of this? Colorado, you know what matters to Colorado State? Play in Wyoming for that boot that they play, right? The two schools aren't that far apart and all that. Things like that. You know what matters to Boise State? Playing games in the state of California. Not just heading and saying, well, we get a little bit more money, but we're going to be East Carolina, and we're going to be at Temple, and we're going to be in Tulane and Tulsa. Nothing wrong with those programs, but some kind of community. The Mountain West, it was put together in various ways, but it has a lot of programs, a lot of interaction, a lot of people who you're in your offices in Denver or Salt Lake or even in California. You got someone else at a different school. You got house divided. It's great. I like seeing the Mountain West stick together and not just chase every last buck. Mountain West can easily be the fifth best conference. They didn't have to go anywhere. So good on places like Colorado State that did the right thing and stuck where they're at. I usually bash athletic administrations, but on this one, I like the fact that the realignment kind of died there was unexpected a little bit. Right, Pete?
Yeah, there was a real thought that Air Force, because a lot of their students come from the East and come from the South, and their players, especially in their football team, don't come from the West. They come from the East, that it made some sense to go. And I think what happened was once Boise and San Diego State said no thanks, they really felt like they'd be on a Western flank. And look, I just think common sense won. A very rare time in college athletics that common sense won out. And now I think it's going to be really intriguing, Dan. The Mountain West all of a sudden has all this momentum. And they really have a strong case that they are the sixth best league. So do you go make a power play and try to take some of the best available in Texas, be it North Texas, be it Rice? UTSA has been mentioned.
SMU.
And yeah, I don't think – here's the thing. The reason why they were tempted to go to the AAC was that the AAC offers a lot more money. Like their TV deal, the average is about $7 million. The Mountain West deal, the average is somewhere in the threes.
It's not a lot more money, though. It's a little more money.
Correct.
I know that's percentage. And then they're going to lose some of that because they're losing UCF and,
But I don't think that the AAC is vulnerable for poaching. All right. And if you're SMU, you really don't fit in either league, right? Like one's too far west, the other's too far east. So you probably sit back and take the guaranteed money. The interesting thing, if we really want to go like inside baseball conference politics, is that the Mountain West TV deal comes up, I believe, in 25. They did a short deal, their last deal. It's not that lucrative, but they have a chance to really cash in. And any decision some of these schools have to make is, okay, what does the new AAC deal look like? And can they keep that $7 million, which stretches out to 10 by the end of the deal? It's a billion-dollar television deal, but I don't think when it is refurbished this next time, it's going to be that much. That's the big mystery. Nobody, I mean, I was talking to people at the schools considering going. I've talked to people at the AAC. I've talked to schools in the AAC. Nobody can give a straight answer on what that TV deal is going to look like. And so the Mountain West all of a sudden now looks like a growth stock, where the AAC all of a sudden hit this crossroads and got a few rejections and looks like it could be stagnant at the very least. So anyway, lot of intrigue at that level in college athletics. But at the core of what Dan said, I agree with 10,000%. I think that's one of the great say something nicest we've had on this podcast. Like, it's the water cooler.
I'm a nice guy because I'm the nicest guy. That's why.
You are the nicest guy.
I'm the nicest guy. And of course, I'm going to say the nicest thing. All right. That's our pod. Keep subscribing. Share us on social media. Send us news tips. We'll be back. Pat will be back midweek show as we preview the next week's action. Talk to you later.